This is the Good Things Guy podcast with myself, Brendan DeCue, South Africa's very own Good Things Guy. I'm on a mission to change what the world pays attention to. I truly believe that there's good news all around us, and I spend my time hunting down and reporting on the best good news stories from South Africa and the world. In the Good Things Guy podcast, you'll meet these everyday heroes and hear their incredible stories. Welcome back to the Good Things Guy podcast, where we celebrate the positive stories and incredible people making a difference in our world. I'm your host, Brendan DeCue, the Good Things Guy, and today we have a heartwarming episode lined up for you. We're joined by Wayne Allen from Tiny Owls Baby Home, an organization dedicated to providing a loving and nurturing environment for babies and young children in need. Tiny Owls Baby Home is not just a shelter, but a haven where children receive the care, love, and support they deserve. Wayne, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Brent, thank you very much. We appreciate you guys having us on and for your support. Thank you.
Absolutely. Let's start right at the beginning. Can you share the story behind the founding of Tiny Owls Baby Home and what inspired its creation?
Well, the baby home was founded in October of 2018. And what preceded that was the adoption of our own three children, post our four biological children. So, when we adopted our seventh child, Gracie, she came from a baby home very much like ours, but based in Swellendam. And, having been exposed to the adoption world, we realized the tremendous need, for places of safety. The big need for families to adopt babies. And we saw that it was happening one-on-one with Kanga moms. And we saw an opportunity to roll that up and turn it into a nonprofit and convert a part of our house to a giant nursery and create that space for babies to be safe and loved whilst the social workers are finding their forever families.
What are the statistics like in South Africa? Is it quite harrowing if we look at the number of babies that are in need of homes like this?
Well, Brent, that's a great question. And unfortunately, not a very positive answer. Depending on which statistics or which global organizations you look at, whether it be World Bank or such like organizations, South Africa ranks within the top six countries in the world for having the highest percentage of orphans of their child population. We don't look great there. We have estimates vary from 3.5 million orphans to 5 million orphans in South Africa. And the adoption rate in our country is inexplicably low, with just over 1,100 adoptions a year of that 3.5 million base.
I guess that leads me into my next question, which would be, why is the adoption rate so low? Is it red tape? Is it bureaucracy? Or is it the fact that there's not enough families who want to take these kids in your opinion?
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Look, I don't think it's any one simple answer. I think it could be more families who would stand up to adopt. I don't believe that to be the constriction. I think, unfortunately, it does lie on government side. I've had it on good authority from attorneys who deal with respective government departments who summarized it in the following, saying that we have one of the most advanced or progressive constitutions in terms of the Children's Act and in terms of prioritizing the rights of a child. But unfortunately, in the execution of that, and unfortunately also coupled with the officials that execute on that, their worldview and their cultural beliefs don't align with the act. And so, you know, you find the officials dragging heels and creating obstacles in terms of preventing adoptions going through. So I think the bottleneck certainly sits on government side. It doesn't sit on parents waiting to adopt. And there are various cultural beliefs that drive that. I think there's some good literature out, research that's been done by a lady called Dee Blackie, who's done some superb work on that. It really highlights what those reasons are.
But that's one side of the story, right? So we've got the harrowing stats where you mentioned anywhere between 3.7 to 5 million orphans in South Africa. And that is a sad reality that we have in our country. But step in, homes like yours,
that are truly making a difference. Can you tell me a little bit more about how many kids do you have in your home and how they go from your home to perhaps a forever home?
So to give you some sort of context, Tiny Al's Baby Home is a nonprofit company. So we are registered with the Department of Social Development and with SARS in terms of our public benefit organization status. So we are permitted by law. We have a Form 39 issued by the Children's Court that authorizes Kim and myself as the two safety care parents to have up to six babies at a time, over and above however many children we may have ourselves. And we've chosen to stretch that to its maximum within the law and offer facilities for up to six babies. After six babies, so if you want to go to seven, to, I don't think there's any restriction on that, you become what they call a CYCC, which is a child and youth care center. Then you require additional facilities. I can't recall exactly all that it is, but you basically become a children's home at that point, and you have psychologists or social workers and various other professionals that you need to have on site to be able to run the home. It becomes more complex and it becomes more institutional really at that point, which is why we opted to stay inside of the six, where we can provide direct care. We know those babies. We have our carers that assist us are assigned a baby. So the baby, you know, gets to form a bond with as fewer people as possible. And that's a very important thing in terms of upbringing and minimizing the trauma that the child will have being away from its parents in terms of the attachment cycle. Babies are designed to have form an attachment cycle with their mother and also their dad. And when that is split amongst multiple carers, it definitely impacts it. So we address that by having one carer or a specific carer to that baby. And we stay full. We're at six right now. We had a placement, actually at five right now. We had a placement last week. And we've already got the social workers saying, are you available? Can we place the next one with you? So we really dip below five babies at a time, and we're mostly full.
Wayne, you just spoke about the fact that last week a baby found a forever home. What does it feel like to know that you played an integral role into that baby, you know, getting a second chance at life?
Yeah, it's overwhelming. You see this precious little person. They've been given a really, really rough start, and sometimes not to the fault of the mother. Those birth mothers, we often meet them at the placements, and you know they're doing the absolute best they can to act in the best interest of their little one. And often they're filled with shame. They struggle, and it's not an easy time. But on the other hand, you see the joy of the parents, the forever family, and the comfort that it does bring to the birth mom, knowing that her baby is going to have the best possible start in life. And I must say, I've witnessed a number of these, and certainly on the international adoptions, the parents visit the baby home to acclimate little one before they take the baby away with them. Obviously, once all the paperwork has been done, and it's like a special supernatural moment that you witness, where you see this little baby bonding with their mom and dad. And it's nothing that you can tell the baby or explain to the baby. It's a natural, precious moment. If I give you one example, we had a little one. Her name's changed now, so I can use the name she had with us. She was Nicole, very bright little girl who didn't just cry. She screamed, cried. She was very difficult. And when she met her adoptive mother, it just changed completely, like a complete flip. And we were privileged to be able to receive feedback. And as the little ones grow, the moms send photos through the social workers to us. So we get to see them growing up. And this little girl is nothing like she was when she was with us, because she found her mommy. And she knew that we weren't her mommy. The carers weren't her parents. And she wanted her mommy. And when she got her mommy, she settled. And that was such an insight for us. You know, you think they're little and they don't necessarily understand, but intuitively they do. It's just an overwhelming privilege and a sense of gratitude that you're left with, that we are the ones that are entrusted with these precious lives. We are the ones that get to be blessed by this experience and knowing that we're making a difference to somebody's life. And it's difficult to explain it unless you've been through it, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's incredible.
So I don't speak about this often, and maybe not enough, but my dad was adopted. He didn't go through a baby home. He was adopted. I don't know the full scenario behind that. But my granny and grandpa, who I know as my granny and grandpa, they're no longer with me, but they were the best parents to my dad. And they were the best granny and grandpa I could have ever have asked for. And in reality, without my dad finding that forever home and having that support system, he wouldn't have been the man that he was. And I guess I wouldn't have been the guy that I was. So the role that you play is so bloody important and so incredible. You and your wife and your kids and all the support systems, the caretakers that you have looking after these kids, it's also incredibly important to shaping not just that baby's life, but the extension of that baby's life and generations to come. So I commend you for the great work you do. So you've been going for 6 years now, am I
Yes.
in saying that? How many babies have come through your doors and moved on to their forever homes in that time?
So we've got currently, our website says 58, but because of the little one last week, we're now at 59. So 59 babies in total have been placed in our care. So we still have five with us now. 47 have adopted, six reunited, and one has gone into long-term foster care. Well, thank you for sharing the story about your dad. I mean, that's really personal, and you know, it's a vulnerable thing. That sense of identity is so important. We've adopted three children, and they are now 13, or actually 14, almost 14 years old, and Gracie is 10 years old. And friends of ours have commented on when those babies first arrived, they were very stressed because their whole environment's changed. And our friends have commented on how they've settled down and how well they're adjusted just because they're in a family, not because we do anything right or any or particularly different to anyone else, but just the security of a mom and dad, parents, and a home, it does something to us. And I think many people underestimate the value and how much they have in their hands to give. By just opening your home just to one, you change the trajectory of their lives forever. I know that my little girl, Gracie, she doesn't do it so much now, but when she was younger, she used to take my iPhone and she keeps looking at when she was little. She wants to see when I was a baby. And that need for identity, who am I? Where did I come from? Who are my people? Is so strong. It's built into us. And one of the things we do, the baby home does, is what we have is a we call it mementos. So that missing gap, the time that the baby was with us before they go to their forever family, we set up a box that has their first baby grow, key milestones, photographic shoots that we do once a month with a professional person that comes in, and we create an album, and we send up a memory stick of all the photos and videos of little one, and that helps fill that gap in. And that identity, understanding who you are, is absolutely core to your personality development and to your self-esteem, self-worth, and how you interact with the rest of the world as you grow up. We're so grateful that we got those understandings or that those insights early on, and we were able to implement that with the mementos box that is handed over to the foster parents on adoption day.
You and your entire team are doing God's work. Absolutely. I have to ask, you're dealing with little babies. You're dealing with really traumatic circumstances, sometimes where these kids come from. Have you had moments where you've felt a little bit overwhelmed or sad by this need that we have in our country to look after all these kids? The fact that you can only take six in at a time. How do you deal with that?
You're asking all the hard questions.
That's what I do. That's what I'm here for.
it undoes you. I really struggle personally with that. And the best we can do is raise awareness and encourage other families to do the same. You know, the key difference in a child's life is one responsible adult. It just needs to be one parent. It doesn't have to be a mom and a dad. Just be one. And it's a kind of case of don't mess it up. You know, you've been given this privilege, this responsibility to look after the little one, to bless them, to give them the best possible start. And we've been entrusted with that responsibility, and we take that as seriously as you possibly could. It's a bittersweet day on adoption day. There are a lot of tears on our side, coupled or mixed with tears of joy when you see what little one is going to. And I think because we've been on both sides, because we are adoptive parents and we are safety care parents, we know the blessing and joy that that little baby is going to bring to that family. That's why we do it. And
Absolutely. I think what shines through is your passion for what you're doing. And the reality is, at the end of the day, you're helping all these little babies get their second chances in life and become hopefully one day great parents that do the same for others. You speak about other parents, that one responsible parent that might be able to take on this task as well of looking after these little ones. How do people go about doing that?
So how does the adoption process work? That's a good question. And we get asked that question frequently. And we actually have an FAQ on a website now just addressing it. But very briefly, do receive a number of requests saying we'd like to adopt, you know, can we come visit? Strictly not allowed, because then you're kind of moving into, you know, I'm shopping for a person. You have to go through your social worker. So you would apply to a social worker, registered social worker. We work with a number of agencies. There's some really good ones in our country. They are public or government sponsored or created agencies, and then they're private. So you would go and approach the social worker. You would declare your interest in wanting to adopt. They would do an interview, and they would basically screen you as a family to see that, you know, you are able to look after the little one, that you're stable financially, emotionally, that your relationship's in a good place, if you're married or if you have a partner. And then they proceed to match you to little ones, and they understand your requirements, what your family looks like, and they're then comfortable that you are a suitable family. And then they match the little ones that they know they have available that are in safety care, and they align them. And sometimes the birth mother is involved. The birth mother gets to choose sometimes the families that she'd like her little one to go to. Certainly the birth mothers that approach the social workers whilst pregnant are included in the process, which I think is a wonderful thing. And we did that. We put a little in our adoption process, we put a little photo book together that told a story of our family and what life would be like for their little one if they chose to choose us as a family. And so families get to do that. If there's a match, there's a legal process that they then go through, and the little one is then placed with them. It isn't difficult. I think financially, they do use sliding scales, so it's, you know, depending on your financial situation. They never ever want to let money get in the way of a child having a forever family. So I think some people may be scared off by that, but that's not a reason not to adopt. You can certainly start the conversation with a social worker, and they will request your financials, just your financial standing, and they will then be able to adjust the fees accordingly. You know, I think again, what I said in the beginning is true, is that people underestimate how much they have in their hands. They underestimate what their family, what their situation can bring to a little one, the value that they can add in blessing a little one with a home, a stable, loving environment. That alone changes children. Yeah, you cannot understate the value that, or sorry, overstate the value that a family will bring by just opening their home to a little one.
I was going to ask you what your final message is for anybody that is listening right now who might, I don't know, something has stirred inside of them to be open to adopting or fostering. And I think you've said it there, is that it makes all the difference, right? That's the difference that the kids are going to get by getting a loving home. So then I guess I'll go, where can people get hold of you? Where can they find out more information? Where can they gain access to all of the sort of knowledge that you have? Where can they go?
Brent, the easiest way for folks to get hold of us is through the website. tinyowls.org.za. If we can't answer their questions, we'd gladly point them to a social worker that could, and we will start them on that journey. We would be privileged and would be so grateful if folks would get hold of us and we could point them in the right direction and know that we had a small part in facilitating a baby going to a forever family. Brent, just from our side to Good Things Guide to you and your team, this exposure, the kindness that you're showing to Tiny Owls and just the support, the time that you're allocating to us is making a difference. You are part of the team making a difference in little ones' lives. So from all of us, we just want to say thank you to you and your team.
My first knee-jerk reaction is that's absolutely silly because you're doing the great work here. But my grandmother taught me to always say thank you when getting a compliment. So thank you very much. I will relay that to the team. I think you, your wife, your kids, the caretakers, everybody that's involved with Tiny Owls is you just heroes in my eyes. And so thank you for the work that you do. To all of our listeners, we're going to put a link inside of this podcast should you want to get hold of Wayne and the team or just get more information. That's the Good Things podcast for this week. Thank you so much for listening. That's it. Wishing you only good things. And for more good things, visit www.goodthingsguy.com. Okay? Love you. Bye.